Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. It's Friday afternoon. You just heard Bob Silverman's voice up there in the Northeast giving us the bat call.
No one needs that. No one needs that. That's awful.
It's great. It's Friday. The sun is shining. I don't think it's shining in the Northwest, as Andrew Hammond in the Northwest told me before we started recording. But how is the weather?
Portland-ass weather out here too. Let me just tell you, in the Northeast, very, very rainy Pacific gray Twin Peaks ass weather.
Well, that's not what's going on here. But that voice you hear right there, and that you heard to start off this show, is Robert Silverman of the Daily Beast, up there in New York City. Robert, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. This has been a good week. Staying busy. Watched my Boy Meets World this morning. Read the Times this morning. Watched some dumb stuff from the presidential town halls last night. Didn't need to do that at any point this morning, but that was a gigantic waste of my time. But yeah, doing pretty good. The weekend's here. Going to the Tennessee-Kentucky game tomorrow. I'll make sure to text you updates as the game is going on, Bob. I know you're going to be riveted by the update.
SEC football is a big part of my life.
That's
as you can read in my book that I wrote in 2008, Slangin' Down South, where I went to every single SEC football stadium and tried the corn dogs. It was a very notable book that many people read and loved.
People forget. Up there in the Northwest, as we alluded to, it's Andrew Hammond of the Tacoma News Tribune. Andrew, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm good. I like to call this depressing Baltic weather. Like, it's not even just like Pacific Northwest. Like, you know how like you can kind of see clouds and all of that a little bit. Or you can see kind of like the mountains, you can kind of see the ranges and all that. Like when there's no visibility, but there's no fog, I just like to call it, you know, Baltic weather. Like I feel like I should be like in depressing Eastern Europe. As I'm clearly in a great Friday mood.
But see, that's peak weather. I don't like summer. I don't know what y'all's favorite seasons are, but I'm ready for fall. I'm ready for winter. I'm ready to move forth into the doom and gloom type of months and the early darkness. I love when it gets dark at 6 o'clock. I'm excited for that.
What the hell is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
He's a
That's not a rhetorical
person.
Question. Answer it. No one likes that. Ah, who among us does not enjoy the feeling of less daylight and things growing dark sooner so that the day feels shorter and more fraught? Who does not get a real bang out of that?
I'll say this. I will defend
Join me,
partially.
Andrew.
Nope. I'm not going to go all in. I will side with you in only these terms. I like the late October, early November, fall weather for a game, whether no matter what outdoor sport. When that late or that early sunset starts to hit, like to me, that's one of the coolest settings for a game. Like that, those late afternoon when right as the sun is going down, it's perfect. But no, that's the only time I like that type of weather.
Mm. But see, right. Here's the thing: is I love darkness and I like the dark. I like.
Oh God!
Oh my God!
I was born in the dark. All right, Bane, thank you for that.
I think it's maybe because like I used to pull so many all-nighters, and I'm very pro owl. I'm looking at my owl statue right in front of me. I'm naturally nocturnal, so I've always just done my best work at night, and I've enjoyed like working through the night. I've enjoyed just being up at nighttime.
Even the height of summer, there's at least 12 hours of darkness, and now there's more.
Yeah, I want 18. I want 18 on a daily basis. That's
you know that Alaska is a U.S. state that you can move to.
I'm not moving to Alaska.
I'm just telling you.
Hey, they have the last existing Blockbuster because literally they cannot get movies and movie theaters on a regular basis up there.
Really?
Velocity self-storage is what we're saying, aside from the darkness and the Blockbuster video.
I don't know. I've just always been someone that prefers nighttime. I love nighttime. I don't like the day. The day is overrated. The sun? I'm out on the sun. I don't need the sun.
Uh-huh. All right. Yep. So
Bob's gonna hang up on us.
I am going to hang up on you. Let's talk some sports as hard as we can with Andrew and Bob on this pod. Come on.
Bars.
As much as Bob would like to talk more about the SEC and what's going to happen, what chaos is going to unfold, we're not going to talk about the SEC on this here podcast. We're going to talk about the NBA, which wrapped up another season. The Lakers, obviously, coming out on top. LeBron gets another ring. There is some dispute as to what number this is for the Lakers, depending on if you count the Minnesota years. I am one of the people that do not. But
what?
No, it's weird. I would not count the Braves, the Milwaukee Braves. I wouldn't count the St. Louis Hawks if they had won anything. I don't think so. I'm okay with that line of thinking. That reasoning makes sense to me. If it's not your city, if you moved, I don't like the Thunder. Are they counting the Sonic stuff? I don't like it.
They are counting the Sonic.
Yeah, I don't like it.
They are. There's a difference between that and like completely just hijacking somebody's history like Oklahoma City did, like, which makes it worse. But go on.
Go ahead, Bob.
They move the titles count. That's ridiculous. Don't be silly. Don't be stupid.
They don't count. They count for minute. The Minneapolis Lakers are different Lakers. That's a
You've
different
been
organization.
Overruled on your own pod, dude.
We're not even 10 minutes in, and Bob has already been disgusted with two of my takes. I love it. This is what the people want.
I'm sighing like a sixth-inning Keith Hernandez at this point.
Well, that is how I feel.
1986 or 2020 Keith Hernandez?
2020 Keith Hernandez, when like the Mets are being blown out in a dreary midweek game against the Rockies or something, and Keith just really wants to go home. And so he pretty much stops doing color commentary and communicates in various grunts and sighs to express his disappointment with the poor fundies. It's really
that's what I've missed about like dog days of summer baseball this year. Like, we never really had that from teams.
No, it was really, and I think, not to completely sidetrack us, this is sort of an NBA thing, and I think why young Chase has such a bad and 100% wrong take about the Lakers is, I think what a lot of people realize, or I definitely did, is so much of sports is rhythmic and seasonal, and that I don't know how to process an NBA title that ends in October. It doesn't feel like it actually, like the moment the Lakers won, that was, you know, I watched the end of the game. It was a blowout. It wasn't that much, you know, that Miami ran out of gas. Okay, that's normal. But like the next day, no one was talking about it. No, I mean, there were some, you know, there were articles, there were things, there was chatter, but it wasn't an event that anyone found important who wasn't directly employed by the Los Angeles Lakers or a, you know, bone deep Lakers fan. And having it happen in after the weird, you know, bubble season and even weirder bubble playoffs, and at the same time as the NFL is in full gear and SEC football, and yet also, but the play baseball playoffs are happening at the right time, and hockey, and like it's all the entire rhythm of it is off, which is why, you know, we never had those boring August games that you could listen to as white noise on the background, where the only punctuating sounds are Keith Hernandez grumbling about something, or and you know, that goes with a temperature, and that goes with a when does the sun go down in the sky, and that goes with a rhythm in life, and that goes, there are a whole series of things about how, or at least I, organize sports as a backdrop and a soundtrack to the rhythm of life that got thrown entirely out of kilter. And no matter how well the NBA erected this bubble, I don't think there was anything they could have done to fix that. And part and parcel of why it felt so artificial, real, and wrong.
Do you think, in a way, because you honestly, Bob, you bring up a really, really good point. And sorry to sidetrack this, Chase, but Bob brought up a good point, no, so I want to address it.
It's weird that we might as well jump on it, you know, when we
have right? Yeah, absolutely. Here's my, like, yeah, it felt kind of like, okay, you know, you crown a champion, and it you know, it's not like, you know, any type of, like, BCS or college football playoff crap like they, but it honestly, the game and the series felt like, and Heat fans got on my ass for this, and
all three of them did. Wow!
You know what? Heat Twitter is basically like, and this is kind of like Warriors Twitter as well. Heat Twitter is like 10% the actual fans, and the other 40% is people on basketball Twitter just hating everything. And then the other 50% is anti-LeBron. Mm. So, I mean, and that's like, and it pretty much anything anti whoever the Lakers are playing Twitter. But I basically said that the Heat feel like, and it actually worked out this way, the Heat feel like that 4 or 5 seed in the NCAA tournament that, you know, reaches the Final Four.
The George Mason of the NBA. I love this.
But the thing is, people who understand basketball knew what I was talking about. And then they were like, no, they aren't. Like, they're a legit contender in the East. I'm like, I don't care. Like, yeah, you won the Eastern Conference. Congratulations. But you were outmanned. You were outgunned going into the series. And this is after the injuries to Dragic and Bam. So I'm just like, this feels like, and it was game one, I was like, this feels like watching the 4 seed make a Final Four, have this great run. Oh, then you gotta play the number one seed. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's what that series felt like. And Heat fans got on my ass for it, and little did we know, literally, that's what ended up happening in instead of 5 games, but like 6 games. I don't know, man.
Do you guys remember history's most passionate Miami Heat fan from, this was 2013?
Good job, good effort, kid.
No.
Was this the Tom Haverstraw one where he kept cutting into that press conference?
No. This is a woman named Philomena Tobias.
Very
South Beach looking woman with, you know, middle aged.
Didn't she like kill her son?
Yes, she did. There was a viral shot of her waving her fist and yelling at Joakim Noah as he exited the game.
Oh, I remember this. Yes.
And then people were like, hey, who's that lady? And it turns out she was accused by her widow's brothers of drugging her husband, who was like this, I think he was a hedge fund manager or investment fund manager. He drowned in the family pool. And there were a lot of talk. It involves a male stripper named Tiger in the story, which I highly recommend.
That's right.
Yeah. Philomena Tobias, a male stripper named Tiger, and copious amounts of cocaine led to this woman just screaming bloody murder at Joakim Noah. I would say just as viral as the Good Job, Good Effort kid. Although people like the Good Job, Good Effort kid.
I did not like that kid. You want to know why? Because I'm sitting at I was at a bar for this one. I'm watching games. I hate watching sports games at a sports bar because it's just the worst thing ever. You run into the worst people there. I'm watching this.
If you go to like a team bar, especially a college team bar, that can be a lot of fun. But you're not really going to spend... Yeah, but the fun isn't really about watching the game while watching the game. There are a lot of other things that are more good fun. But yes, go on.
But yeah, if you're at like a sports bar with like the casual fan who tries to like, guys, dude, you're not winning best friends. You're not winning the smartest guy at a sports bar award. Anyway, I'm watching Good Job, Good Effort Kid, and I'm sitting there absolutely hammered just watching this. And, you know, at that point, I should have known that LeBron was going to find a way to ruin my happiness. and so I'm sitting there just as people are leaving, I'm screaming, good job, good effort. And people thought it was hilarious because I'm sitting there in all Celtics gear. And then Boston loses in seven, and we go back to that same bar like 2 weeks later. And one of the bartenders, who was this girl I know, she screamed at me, good job, good effort, when I walked in. And I was just like, well played, ma'am.
Yeah, when it was a meme, it got annoying real fast. I like the kid, though. The kid was sincere. It was horrible. A very, very sincere exhortation by the kid.
It was fucking hilarious.
It was also hilarious.
Which naturally brings us to Daryl Morey and his exit from the Houston Rockets. Do you know what I don't like about the current like sports media climate, among a multitude of things?
I would love to hear this.
I'm seeing these takes immediately after. It's like, this was the scuttlebutt for months. Like, the amount of people who come out, they come out from out of nowhere to inform people, their Twitter followers, that, hey, I'd heard rumblings.
Yes.
If I hear heard rumblings one more time, I'm going to throw my laptop out the window. Because I don't understand what that adds. I don't understand the point of just tweeting out, yeah, this was brewing for a while. And then the immediate reactions all across sports media of like, yeah, there were talks. We were surprised when Tillman went on MSNBC to talk about the basketball team, and just, it's rare for owners to do that. And I just was watching how this all unfolded, and I don't understand like this is being like, why this is so strange, and why reporters are so adamant that they have to make sure that everyone knows that they had heard rumblings from some source that Daryl Morey was not long for this job. But if he had just stayed on, they would have been like, yeah, nothing would have been said. It wouldn't have come out that like, I knew this all along. I don't know. I just don't like it.
Look, it's reporters getting a little snooty on Twitter. Yes. And I understand, but like, look, if you talk to any beat guy worth their salt, there are a lot of things that they know enough to be able to say with confidence, but can't put in the papers or on the internet. You know, there are a lot, and if you want to, if it seems smugly dismissive to sort of air parts of that after the fact, yeah, I'll give you that. Probably not necessary. Like, if you couldn't get it while it happened, then you don't get to Monday morning quarterback after the fact.
Right,
you know,
that's what, like, I'm saying.
Don't do that. Mm. Yeah, but it's fine. It's whatever. Like, grant them their vanities. I don't. It doesn't bug me as much, really.
Okay.
I'll defend Bob partially, and I'm not saying that, you know, I completely disagree. I think because I will sometimes do this, and Chase, if you ever see one of my tweets like this, and you throw your laptop out, that's on you, buddy. That's on you.
Well, joke's on you. I live in a one-story house. It's going to be fine.
Oh, that – sure. Okay. Throw it hard enough. Actually, hey, good job. Good effort on that throw, buddy. But no, I think if you pay attention to what's going on and you kind of are up to speed on the situation, or you maybe kind of read between the lines and follow essentially, you know, lack of a better term, follow the breadcrumbs on a particular situation, I think you can say, okay, yeah, it makes sense that this move happened. But yeah, like if it's some guy who's just, you know, oh, well, I figured they were going to make this move. No, you didn't. Like, if I see people on my timeline who talk basketball or who are, you know, kind of, you don't have to necessarily be a league insider or a beat writer, but just be up on your shit collectively. Okay, fine, cool. But if it's somebody who's saying, oh, well, it makes sense, or I knew this was coming. No, you didn't. I haven't seen you talk about it. I haven't seen you, like, post anything about it. Like, shut up.
I'm trying to think if I've ever done that. If I've ever been like, yeah, well, I knew.
If you're on the inside and kind of like Bob said, there are some things that, you know, as a beat writer and as somebody who's talked with beat writers, you know, on and off the record about things, like, I mean, I don't think this will happen, but say, you know, college football wise, say Mike Gundy leaves Oklahoma State. I think anybody who knows will be like, oh yeah, that we could have seen that coming, because he wasn't getting as paid as much. He doesn't feel as appreciated, even though he's the king there, basically. He doesn't feel like he's being as appreciated as he should. And so, yeah, if Mike Gundy were to leave and you were going to see people say, oh, well, I knew that was happening. Okay, I would buy that. But, like, if, I don't know, you know, Brian Kelly leaves for the NFL and people say, oh, I knew that was happening. No, you didn't. Shut up.
Look, I mean, I think we talked about this before. Like, the job of covering either a single team or the league on a regular basis is an incredibly difficult and grueling one. And there's always going to be, like, there are a lot of reasons. There are complicated reasons why sometimes information needs to be hoarded. Let's just leave it.
Yes.
At that.
Yes.
Okay. I'll leave it that cryptic. Like, and if you want to say that, you know, actually, reporters, no matter what field, should just say, write whatever they know and report it when they know it's true. Yeah, in an ideal world, yes, that's a good sentiment. Sometimes the real world fails to live up to our idealized expectations.
Yeah, I'm an ideologue, you know? Robert. I know stuff that I've never told anyone. I haven't told you guys that are just behind the scenes that I just know of, and I'll see it, and I keep it to myself. I like it. I don't care. I think it's what you should
do.
Hey,
guys.
Chase is actually naked right now and covering himself in scented oil. And he wasn't going to tell you guys.
I kind of figured that's why he wants us on the show, because, you know, like, that's his routine. And so, like, it basically balances out our chaos and his serenity. So I respect it.
I'm not going to judge his skin regimen.
Hey, I do a skincare twice a day, morning and night. So, you know,
what have I done? Why did I encourage both of y'all to be here every week now? What have I done? What have I gotten myself into? This is borderline cyberbullying.
Did you see that there was a blind item in, I think it was an Atlantic story by Amanda Mull about men's skincare routines? It may have been Amanda Mull, it may have been Maya Kozoff. Apologies to Amanda and Maya if it's neither or both of you. There was a blind item about a then Gizmodo Media Group staffer who just washed his face with dish soap. And
oh my God.
Every single woman who read this, who I spoke to, was just horrified by it.
Jesus.
And granted, I am aware of which Gizmodo Media Group staffer it is, but I refuse to snitch. I did not snitch in the DMs or the group chat, and I will not snitch now.
Nope. But no, Bob, you bring up a really good point. One of my early mentors, this is regarding a coaching search that, you know, his intel on the inside, he shot me a text. He said, there's going to be some news coming out. There's going to be some news coming out in the next day or two. Be on the lookout for it. And little did I know, I was getting a lesson in beat reporting and all that. Mm-hmm. And this was before I actually became a beat writer. And he basically, you know, broke the story that a coach was getting fired, although this had been like 2 weeks in the works. And so he's doing all of his stuff in the background. And I learned this as a beat writer. He was like, sometimes if, you know, you may be sitting on so many sticks of dynamite and you have no idea, you know, if you published a story and you published, you know, things that were told to you off the record and all the things that all the intel that you gather when you're putting together, you know, anything as a beat writer. He was like, some of the best beat writers will sit on so many different things and they could publish one quick, you know, blurb in a story and you're setting off so many fireworks and you're exploding so many things. And I was like, yeah. And I kind of learned that as a beat writer covering college athletics. I'm sitting there like, man, like I could slide this on a story, slide that. And I was like, nope. Mm-mm. And so like, there's some beat writers who are really, really good at it. And then there are some who will just, oh, now that it's out, let me say my piece. No, shut the fuck up. You know that shit. It's like you got your information from me, and because you were reading my blog.
Mm. Which actually brings us back to Tillman Fertitta and the way he is running the Houston Rockets. I'm very excited about this.
I love it. Boy, are they screwed.
I love this so much. It adds something to the NBA. I like bad owners. I like this kind of thing. I like that the NBA got in bed with Tillman Fertitta. I like that Adam Silver okayed this. This is great.
Tillman Fertitta sucks ass. Ugh. I don't know what they're going to do with Westbrook. I'm terrified the Knicks are going to end up trading for Westbrook, which would be fun because I like Russ. But not for win. That wouldn't be good for winning, which I would like to watch eventually with the Knicks. I don't know what they're going to do. Are they going to bring it like? Are they going to bring back Jeff Van Gundy, who hasn't coached now in what?
Well, I've seen that he is coaching. He coaches the Team USA stuff.
He's coaching the Team USA select team, but at the same time, that's like the Team USA C team for Olympic qualifying. Which nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
My most slanderous anti-Nick take is that Jeff Van Gundy is one of the more overrated basketball coaches over the last two decades. Mm. Jeff Van Gundy rode the coattails of one improbable run to the finals and one other decent year with the Knicks into this notion that, oh, yeah, Jeff Van Gundy, respected NBA coach. Like, the dude did nothing with the Rockets. Dude, you know, Andy, and since then he's just been a professional grouch on TNT, which, don't get me wrong, I would like to be paid that much to be a grouch on TNT, but it seems to me like there are other coaches who maybe are more up on the modern game, Team USA affiliation notwithstanding, than Jeff Van Gundy, and wasn't a particularly innovative or interesting tactician even at his peak.
Yeah, I mean, like, I get the appeal for Van Gundy. Hell yes, Stan Van. I absolutely.
I understand. Stan deserves more of a chance than Jeff does.
Agreed.
I don't.
If you're desperate for two Van Gundys.
Well, I think the funny thing about Jeff is I love that he only interviews for the Houston job because he lives there and he has Houston Texans season tickets. So he's just like, if you want me, I can't give these tickets
that's
up.
That's not the sign of someone who's going to take the money and phone it in.
Exactly.
I refuse to coach anywhere but a 100-mile square radius of my home. Mm-hmm. That's my one condition. I don't know, man, if he's ready for the grind. I don't know what Houston's going to do. They sunk so... That Russ-Chris Paul trade is going to go down as one of the all-time NBA, let's call it a fleecing. How about that? We haven't said fleecing in a few years. That used to be the hot new term,
yeah.
But no one's saying, so I'm bringing it back.
Well, it's because there's not enough bad GMs anymore. I think fleecing has been eradicated because of that.
Plenty of bad GMs out there. There are tons. Don't let the biz bros.
Hi, Danny Ainge.
Because they got an army of quants at their disposal, they can't still bork this shit entirely. Come on. Come on, get your head out of the McKinsey quarterly profit report and have a call.
I love this. That's fair. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting because they're clearly, I don't think they're going to hire Van Gundy because I think he's going to cost too much.
One more point. The Nets with Sean Marks, beloved Spurs family tree, general manager Sean Marks. He gave 4 years and $44 million to DeAndre Jordan because he's Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving's friend. Don't go telling me there aren't GMs doing incredibly silly things these days just because they can do a data regression chart. I'm sorry. Like, data can lead you to some exactly the same kind of idiocy as like the guys in Moneyball talking about good faith. It's just a different flavor. It really is.
I like
this. Is it me or is the modern GM just in sports? Actually, it's in sports, but more NBA wise. Is it me or is it this? We want to do analytics. Yes, analytics are important. I totally get it. But it's like the market, like you're telling us, oh, the market dictates us to do this. It's like when it comes to free agency, we're going to see all these stupid contracts. And I'm sitting here like, guys, you're going to pay a guy who is meh, you know, maybe kind of worth maybe $5 million more than he actually is, you know, worth. And then you're going to add in another $50 million just because you're a terrible poker player. Like, I'm sorry. Some of these guys are not good at what they do, because if they were good, they would be constantly battling for top four in either the East or the West. You aren't sitting back, you know, fringe five seed slash, you know, battling out for a middle seed. Like, you would be a lot better than you are.
I think what the, you know, quote unquote, like, if you want to talk about it, the entire movement of, you know, every professional team having a fairly well-staffed analytics department except the Mets, and using that to inform their decision-making processes throughout the organization. It's led to a lot of I don't think it's made teams smarter. I think it's made them more conformist and at times less risk-averse. And it's allowed them to disguise penny pinching as if, and sell it to people as efficiency, because an entire generation of fans have been raised to believe that they too could be the guy in the aforementioned, you know,
you could be casual,
yeah, you could be the guy in the casual Uniqlo khakis and fleece zip up. Like, you can be, you should, and not only can you be that guy, you should identify with that guy as part and parcel of your fandom, which I think is bad. I think that is, I'm going to say that trend in sports over the last, let's say, three decades is bad.
And you're getting the same guy. Sorry to interrupt, Bob. Sorry.
No, go for it, man. Jump on it.
It's, you're getting this, those same people from all the same places.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I'm sorry. Fuck that.
it's look, I forget which player said this to me. It was for an article I wrote. It may have been Oscar Robertson. I wrote a story about Joe Caldwell about 3 years ago. Long feature. I interviewed Joe Caldwell, who was an NBA player and an ABA player in the 60s and 70s, who played for like the Hawks and the old Spirits of St. Louis. And he got de facto blackballed by the NBA. And because he was, you know, he's a big part of the union. He was trying to help the league organize. When, long story short, I spoke to a bunch of people for the article, and I forget who said it. I don't think it was Oscar Robertson. It was another player, and I'm not going to go Google my own article because I don't know if it ended up in there. But he said, like, look, the reason that, like, the league getting staffed up with MIT grads is just as stifling of the efforts to diversify as it was when GMs just hired all of their old buddies. It's a different kind of restriction. And like, if you want to talk about like systemic racism in sports, there are like barriers being erected all the time that change. And this one has the gloss and sheen of being more meritocratic than, you know, than in days of yore, but it's the same end game.
Agreed.
Which naturally brings us to Le'Veon Bell signing with the Kansas City.
Smooth as the other side of the pillow.
Talk about the need for analytics, workout, and change. Jesus Christ, Jets.
Why did the Chiefs... Le'Veon is washed. Why are the Chiefs signing him? I'm confused. Andrew, you're a football knower. Explain this to me.
Okay, so basically, Le'Veon Bell, actually, can we just kind of go back to the genesis of this? Jamal Adams leaves. The Jets are a mess. Le'Veon Bell trashes Jamal on the way out, basically saying that he's not committed. He's not being a team guy. And then Le'Veon Bell.
Oh, yeah, Jets seem to be doing quite well. Robbie Anderson is good now.
Le'Veon Bell wakes up one morning in his New York apartment or townhouse or whatever, and he's going to the facility. He realizes, oh, shit, it's the New York Jets facility. He realizes that that the Jets are an absolute tire fire, and he's like, oh, I need to get out. And so you have Adam Gase, who clearly is like Christopher Columbus of NFL head coaches, and for some reason is failing upward just because he's Peyton Manning's best friend. And so you've got Sam Darnold, who I think on any other team in the league could be an actually decent quarterback. You're ruining his growth.
Boy, did they bork that with – I was talking with Mike Bellucci.
Friend of the pod, Mike Bellucci.
Friend of the pod, Mike Bellucci, who works for The Athletic and is also a longtime USC fan. And I asked him this when the Jets drafted Darnold, like a few games into the season. And I didn't watch a lot of Trojans games. So
on the Kentucky Wildcats and Ole Miss Rebels.
I was focused on the lower ranked SEC football teams. And so I was like, look, there are times when Sam Darnold looks like he's doing a decent Brett Favre imitation. And then there are times where you wonder if this is the first time he's ever played professional football. What gives, Mike Pellucci, UFC football knower? And that's the Sam Darnold experience in a nutshell. If you can smooth out those inexplicable brain farts that happen to him once, twice a game on a good game and repeatedly on a bad game, you've got a well above average NFL starting quarterback. If not, he's bad. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, well, thank God they're going to a team that's being coached by first Todd Bowles and now Adam Gase. I'm sure that'll get that shit rolling right quick. Yeah,
and the funny thing is Todd Bowles didn't – the only reason I slightly defend Todd Bowles is because he looks exactly like my dad, and it's hilarious.
Todd Bowles has good – like he's mastered the – like staring into the middle distance blankly NFL coach face. And
yes.
Wait, can we do who our dad looks like in professional sports? Cause okay. So Andrews is Todd Bowles. I know who mine is and who it's always been. It's kind of weird. Brian Cashman and my dad look, my dad is just taller Brian Cashman. They look the exact same.
I don't think my dad looks like anyone in sports. As a 92-year-old Brooklyn Jew, there aren't a lot of archetypes for that. he does look a lot like Noam Chomsky, if that helps. I don't know if that's good. Yeah, I don't know if you want to call leftist politics a sport, but if we can if we can expand the definition a little bit, we'll go Todd Bowles, Brian Cashman, Noel Chomsky, that classic trio we all know and love.
I look at back to the whole Le'Veon Bell thing. Like he realizes, okay, this team is a nightmare. And once again, it seems like if I talk crap on a fan base or I say something, like 2 months later, I'm proven right. So I kind of like to ferment my sports takes and then leave them alone and watch them grow.
They need to marinate. That's all takes me time to marinate. You
absolutely.
Marinate.
And so it's like the Jets are
they get
like,
more
and they trade, they get all these draft picks, they get all these assets. And I'm just like, guys, if you guys want to burn the house down and rebuild, sure. But if you're going to do it, don't hire Adam Gase. Like you cannot keep Adam Gase around.
I assume right now they're just tanking. Like they're keeping Adam Gase around for the tank.
It's not good. I'm sorry. You should not tank if you are a professional team. If you're playing professional sports, you should not tank. And I wish and hope that one day we will have like some type of anti-tanking policy put in place. I mean, I know it's difficult to do, but this was
my point with Hinkie, like with all those years and the entire years long debate about the process and all that. And I was like, look, what Hinkie decided to do was not that radical and innovative a thought. He did not have to do a stint at Bain Capital before he came up with this. Lose a lot and get high draft picks and hope they become stars. That's really like teams have done that forevermore. He just did more of it. That's it. That's the whole thing, which is fine. The part of it that made it a scheme was telling fans that they should be happy about this. One, two, that it stood a greater chance of working than any other team building method. And three, continuing to charge people the same amount of money for a product that was purposely subpar. Like, I would have been 100% behind tanking if the Philadelphia 76ers had said, we are charging prices from 1967 now. it costs $4 to come to the game. A hot dog is 50 cents and a beer is a dime. Come to the game. Well, don't do the dime beers in Philly. That would be a bad idea. But beers is $20. But like if they had said like we are purposely going to provide a subpar product and we will charge accordingly, according to the dictates of the market, then I would have said, okay, that's cool, do that. You're asking me to contribute my time and my emotional currency to this team and charging me full freight for something you are purposely trying to break. That, no, that's you ripping me off. That is my big problem with. So, yeah, like I think like ticket prices, in my humble opinion, should be pegged to wins. That's what I think. That's a way to stop tanking.
Hmm. Andrew, what do you think?
I'm all for it. No, I'm yeah, it's this weird, and this is one reason why I'm not kind of a fan of NBA Twitter, is, oh, the Sixers have admitted that they're kind of tanking, and they're kind of like embracing it. Oh, man, this is awesome. Trust the process. Yeah, what did the process get you? Please tell me. Like your third coach in like 4 years.
You're like a large, like a 6'9 Rajon Rondo, a center who probably won't be able to stay healthy for too many more years, and two of the worst contracts in basketball. Great job, guys. I know there are a bunch of people screaming the last parts were Brian Colangelo's fault, but please don't do that.
Yes, were they? Sure, but you know what? It's not like Brian Colangelo just took over and was like, hey, let's keep going.
The thing that was really the real strangeness at the heart of the entire Sixers Hinkie era was the fact that a bunch of the dudes driving the most intense process fandom were outright socialists, like straight up socialists. And I was like, guys, you know, this is kind of running contrary to your whole ethos. It was really funny. And they were aware of it, too. And yet they managed to convince people to support something that was patently not in their self-interest in either the long or short terms.
Hmm.
In any case, I'm surprised that another NBA team hasn't hired Daryl Morey yet. I don't know. I have no knowledge.
Well, he's in negotiations for a permanent podcast spot on the Bill Simmons
yeah.
podcast.
Yeah. Oh, God. They're going to get him a pod.
Wait.
I'm not actually.
Hold up.
This
hold up.
Is,
say
no.
that again.
That's a joke.
Okay.
Sam Hinkie. Yes. I'm surprised a team hasn't thrown gobs of cash at Sam Hinkie yet.
Well, I actually talked to Jake Fisher, who has a book coming out on tanking next year. I think it's May of next year. And from what I gather from him is Sam is doing other stuff outside of sports now and is content. And he's just, he doesn't want another sports job.
More power to him then, man.
Yeah. I think he's just done.
Yeah. Tanking to the Top, which all you Chase Thomas pod fans out there, if you haven't read it, it's Yaron Weitzman's book. It's quite good.
Great book.
Yeah. Even though Hinkie declined to participate like a coward.
Yes. Call him. Call him out, Bob. Call him out.
He actually didn't participate in the Fisher book either on tanking itself.
Yeah. There is absolutely nothing. Like, the only reason for anyone to participate in a book like that is if they want to get another job in the NBA. And clearly he does.
Yeah. Lastly, bad interview questions this week. Mark Melanson gets a bad interview question about his pants, I believe, or something, or that was Walker Buehler, maybe.
Walker
Buehler got the pants question, and then Melanson gets a question about whether or not the Braves should feel good about winning Game 2 of the NLCS in a really weird way. A bad week. Which was worse? I want to ask you guys. Andrew, which was a worse sports media question? The question posed to Walker Buehler about trending on Twitter, or the question posed to Mark Melanson about not being happy about winning a playoff game?
Walker Buehler about his pants, because I had no freaking context of what was actually going on. So it was like, so Walker Buehler's pants was trending, and I'm so happy that he just said, okay, you know what? What? Like, I had no idea what was going on, so, like, I kind of feel bad in a sense. At the same time, I'm like, I'm glad that I don't know what the hell is going on, because that sounds like a really stupid question.
Bob, which one? Which one's worse?
For me, it's the Melanchon one.
See, I didn't hear that one. What happened with that one?
So, oh, he was. Go, for it, Chase. You so go break it down.
Melanson is the Braves had just won this game, and the Braves almost blew it. Like they almost
barved the hell out of it.
Yes, they barved all over themselves. Yeah. But they avoided the Atlanta sports moment that we're all very familiar with from Atlanta.
It's coming.
But, yeah. He avoided it. Like ultimately he got that last out. He left a runner on third, with the tying runner on third, so they went 8-7. But the reporter does this really weird, long, drawn out question of just being like, should y'all, basically asking, are you like, why are you happy? Or should you be happy about escaping game two with the win? And his face, he's just looking like, I don't understand your question. And he tries to rephrase it in another way that's still saying, hey, you guys should, he like wants to say you guys should not be happy about winning this game because of how close you came to blowing
Jesus
it,
Christ.
But he doesn't actually say that. So he tries to turn it into a question of like, he really wants Melanson to say, yeah, we don't feel good about it. And I don't know why he wanted Melanson to say that, but that's what happened. But yes, Bob, continue.
Yeah, that was silly. It was one of those moments where I felt like the reporter, not to dogpile on the guy who has like had a question, kept trying to talk his way into a better one over the course of it, which is fine. It's like it's not a criminal offense for me. I disagree though. I feel like the Walker, those are some tight pants, and I wanted to know why the pants are so short and so tight on Walker Buehler. And
I think he would have been okay if he didn't lose. If they had won, I think it would have been a okay thing.
The truth waits for no man, and the truth. And why are those pants so tight? I'm sorry, that's a perfectly fine question to ask. Timing may have not been ideal, but I'm sorry, the pants are too tight. That's a perfectly reasonable question.
Bob, have you ever worn skinny jeans?
It made him mad. Yeah, I'm wearing skinny jeans right now.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Andrew, are you a skinny jean person?
I am not. And the reason I will say I'm not a skinny jeans person is... So I wore skinny jeans. Oh God, it's got to be, I want to say 2010. I wore it to a party, and this is when skinny jeans were actually a thing. And I'm like, you know what? These aren't so bad. The next day, I'm seeing pictures on Facebook or whatever, and I see how tight the jeans were on me. Never again. Never again. Will I ever wear skinny jeans?
And if someone had asked you about it, you'd have a perfectly reasonable question, unlike one Walker Buehler.
I have football thighs. Like, I have the thighs of a... Like, I am shaped like a backup NFL tight end.
Okay.
I cannot get away with wearing skinny jeans. I just can't.
So, I can't wear them either, but for very different reasons. When you're tall and super skinny,
it just makes you look taller and super skinnier if you wear the skinny jeans.
Yes, it's unbelievable how bad I look in skinny jeans. It looks like I don't actually have legs and I just have toothpicks.
And yet, this is something like Walker Buehler could have said, I just feel like it makes me look good. And then it would have been an amusing moment and no one would have cared. Instead,
that would have been hilarious.
Yeah, like I see. This is why baseball is not popular among the youths. It's Walker Buehler on the answer a perfectly reasonable pants question.
Oh, Walker Buehler, you missed your moment. All right. Well, are you guys ready to get into our last segment before we wrap up here today? What are your picks? What was the best thing that you read or watched this week? And we'll do this every week on the pod. What was the best thing that you read this week, Bob?
My favorite thing this week was a brief interview by Maya Kozoff, who I'm hyping now twice, possibly undeservedly, about with Christopher with Michael Imperioli. Michael Imperioli, for all of you not logging into IMDb right now, is a fine character actor who's possibly most famous for playing Christopher Moltisanti, and he now hosts. He does a lot of cool stuff because there's not a lot of, you know, full blown movies in production these days. But he does host. Like he will get into it about The Sopranos, and something that's been burbling around online recently is people writing jokes about how the Sopranos would be reacting to current events. And those are all delightful. Like, clearly, AJ Soprano would have gotten into QAnon. No one denies. Yes. Like, Carmela Soprano would have backed Elizabeth Warren and then sort of quickly switched to Joe Biden the moment he won the nomination. Or people trying to figure out how the Sopranos crew would have voted, how many of them would have encouraged mask wearing protocols, how many of them would have thought that, like, Bill Gates is embedding a microchip tracking device inside a vaccine, all that fun stuff. You can find many examples of this from some wisewags on Twitter. So, Christopher has decided to retcon this himself. Occasionally, he's been dropping nuggets about James Gandolfini, such as, like, the fact that James Gandolfini loved and listened to time and time again the Green Day album Dookie. True story, via Christopher Moltisanti, a.k.a. Michael Imperioli. And he's, like, decided to retcon it as, like, Tony got woke late in life. And now... And, like, at first it was like, actually, Tony would not be a Trump guy because he would have had to deal with him at some point, either in Atlantic City or elsewhere, and gotten shafted by Trump in some kind of mob adjacent business deal and would recognize him as a con artist. And so he would not be a Trump guy. And other people are like, yeah, but he would want the lower taxes. So he would kind of hold his nose, et cetera, et cetera. In any case, Christopher has decided to, aka Michael, has retconned this and be like, no, Tony was woke. So there's a delightful interview. Let me find the publication so I can give it the hype it deserves. In Vanity Fair, entitled "Do the Sopranos Love Joe Biden? Just Ask Michael Imperioli." It is short and sweet and quite delightful.
Andrew, what's your pick?
So, the best thing is it read and watch or read or watch?
You can do either. You can do either.
Okay. So, I mean, people have seen this already, so it's not like, you know, it's, I'm not breaking any new ground or anything, but I'm just going to say it furthers my proof on my MLB slogan if I ever get to run a professional sports league. So, Marcelo Ozuna of the Atlanta Braves hits a home run. Yes. Hits a home run, and he does a selfie pose as he's rounding third base. I loved it. People
that was great,
it.
Yeah.
And so
the Braves are fun now. This is very disturbing to some. This is confusing to me because, like, those, like, from the mid '90s through, like, the successful teams in the 2000s, all those Braves teams were so fucking self serious. It's like Chipper Jones's goatee was actually running the team.
No. It was Brian McCann, my friend. He disappears again after last year, and we're fun again. It's Brian McCann.
Yeah. He is the chief of the fun police. And, like, the Braves being, like, as good as those teams were, like, the Braves being cool and fun now is a real mind fuck, let me tell you. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry.
It's all good. No, and it's funny because, one, as you said, they're fun. Two, it furthers my proof on if I were to ever be – I want to be commissioner of a league one day. If I ever ran Major League Baseball, my slogan would be Major League Baseball, pimp that shit. Mm. Like, seriously, have fun. Like, these guys are having fun. And yeah, as Bob said, like, the Braves of the 90s were what we'd probably judge the Cardinals as now. And so, you know, they were super serious, super annoying. And it's like, okay, you guys deserve to lose. Like, good. But now it's like they're entertaining. They're fun. They're fascinating. Like, I'm watching this game like, as much as I want to see Atlanta sports do what Atlanta sports does, I need to see the Braves in the World Series. And I'm pissed. I'm so pissed because
I'm pretty happy
my
about it,
World Series. My, I know I'll be okay. My World Series pick a year ago was Braves Astros. And this is like the third time in like 5 years where my quote-unquote World Series pick happens the year after I pick it. So I'm going to be kind of sort of pissed if I get a Braves-Astros World Series. And by the way, the Astros will come back. And as much as I hate it, I love Dusty Baker. So
look, the Braves can everyone root for the Braves. They can finally be America's team, like they promised back in 1985.
Yeah, back in the '80s when they were like the worst team.
Back when they were like back when the whole thing was like Dale Murphy and Glenn Hubbard, and you had to believe they were America's team.
Dale Murphy, who deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, by the way.
Dale Murphy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but like the rest of the team was like, you know, it's like, hey, come watch the Braves. There's Pascual Perez and
Otis Nixon,
Gene Garber,
Ron Gant.
Yeah, Ron Gant was good. Ron Gant was fun.
I've seen him recently. I saw him last year. He still lives in the Atlanta area. He has the biggest arms I've ever seen. That dude is still quite yoked.
Yeah, he was. Speaking of tight clothing, Ron Gant was one of that generation, late '80s, early '90s guys who were like, I'm going to be yoked and wear this uniform way, way, way too. Like NBA, MLB uniforms in the 1980s were all quite form fitting, but no one was lifting weights yet. So when you got a Jose Canseco or a Ron Gant and they were thick and swole, it was quite noticeable.
I miss pitchers who had the build of Sonny Jurgensen.
Yeah, there's some great, if you like, it's really fun to look at a baseball card of like Charlie Huff from the late 80s. And he's like, well, he's still pitching, throwing the knuckler, and he's only 42 years old. And he looks like your grandfather.
Yeah.
There's a photo of Sparky Anderson when he was managing the Reds in the World Series in 72. And he looked exactly like he always does. He looked like Sparky, which is just one age. It's just that same.
But he was like in his like late 30s, early 40s then.
He was 37.
Oh my God. He was 37 looking like 64.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ.
And like, he was managing as Dick Williams, who was only a few years older, but they all looked like a Norman Rockwell painting, or that they had seen some things.
There you go.
Norman Rockwell. Thank you for that, Bob. Thank you so much.
Sure, man. Anytime. Yeah. Baseball pitchers were there were some round and oval dudes who were successful athletes.
Like Tom Niedenfuhr for the Dodgers. Peak athlete. And you're like, no, he's not. He literally looks like Cliff off of Cheers. What the fuck?
Aurelio Rodriguez, quality reliever for the Astros and a few other teams, went by the nickname Senor Smoke. Just really could easily pass for 50 and a pack a day habit.
Well,
yeah, we need more athletes who don't take care of their bodies at all.
This is why we all love Bartolo Colon.
Right. Because Bartolo got a body like the Grimace.
Not because of the multiple families.
Not because of the multiple families.
No. I completely forgot about that. Jesus Christ.
he was talking about coming. I think he was talking about trying to make a comeback during
this year.
I was really hoping some team. I was like, oh, come on. There has to be a team out there that's just, you know, going through the motions.
The Braves have Felix Hernandez on the opening day roster, so it was a possibility there.
Wow. Yeah. Felix, wow, did that guy go from best pitcher in baseball to washed, speaking of Le'Veon Bell.
It's a
really fast.
As somebody who covered the Mariners briefly in his final year in Seattle, when you're going out there, like he spent his prime, and I'll make this quick, he spent his prime just mowing guys down, yet where was the run support? On the back of a freaking milk carton.
There's a very good YouTube series for someone who has the time. It's 6 episodes long. John Boyce at SB Nation and Alex Rubenstein did a history of the Seattle Mariners. It is, for any Mariners fans or not Mariners fans out there, it is excellent.
Yes.
It's It is an excellent YouTube show with John's delightful DIY tech, which looks like a combination of a Radio Shack HR video and some B-roll from Tron. It's outstanding, and I highly recommend it. And it's, you will learn all about Felix Hernandez. It's great.
And not only is it, like, it's really well produced.
Yeah. It's quite good. I highly recommend if you need it. Granted, it is close to 4 hours long in total, but if you, it's cut down into nice, like 30 odd minute sections. So you can watch it piecemeal if you feel like that's too much of your day to set aside specifically for learning about Seattle Mariners.
There you go. My pick this week to wrap up here, Zach Greinke. Is featured in an ESPN.com piece today. It jumped the rankings just from today because I've been a Zach Greinke guy for like 15 years. I've never related more to a professional athlete than Zach Greinke.
Who wrote that?
Let me pull that up. I don't know who wrote this off the top of my head. I probably should as I'm doing this. Either way, Zach Greinke. He was asked about whether or not he misses fans, and Zach Greinke does not miss fans. This was an AP story, it looks like, that was pulled from ESPN. And his quote in this story is just, it's so real. He's never going to lie to you. Zach Greinke doesn't enjoy the fan aspect of his job. He doesn't enjoy the interaction. He's not looking to make relationships.
Zach Greinke, if he had his brothers, he would just pitch alone in some kind of sealed facility with no windows and possibly no light. That would be the ideal baseball experience for Zach Greinke.
And I appreciate that because he said, quote, "I don't really notice fans when the game's going on, but warming up and practice for games, I mean, for me, it's nice not having fans in the stands. Most people like it. When the game comes on, it's the same for me." And asked to explain, because who says this out loud, he said, "Because then there's no one there to talk to you and ask for autographs and want pictures and all that stuff. I don't like to do that stuff. It's nice not having them for me. Most people like it. I don't like it." Zach Greinke is perfect, and I love him dearly, and I've never related more. I don't like it. If I was a professional athlete, I would operate the same way. I wouldn't do the autographs. I wouldn't do any of that. I wouldn't do the picture taking. It would drive me up the wall. Zach Greinke, I love you forever. So good. So good. All right, guys. Well, that's all I've got. Bob, what can we check out from you this week in the Daily Beast or anywhere else?
Yeah, I've got a story coming in Politico that I'll keep secret for now. I think it should be ready. I filed yesterday, so I think next week it should be up, and I'll
Politibob.
Politibob. And I'll keep it secret. Here's a hint.
Okay.
One of the few beep to respond to Politico's queries was former beep. Though he'd endorsed QAnon on Twitter, he told Politico he stopped posting about the conspiracy after being warned to do so by his wife.
Oh, no.
Then declined to answer any additional questions. Here's my teaser.
I love this. I can't wait to read this. Andrew, what can we check out from you this week?
So, finally, I'm going to be posting the part one of the BCS episode of Into the Archives with Aham. Got Jack Crosby from the College Football editor at CBSSports.com. So basically me and him just got to nerd out for like 2 hours. So we are finally posting that. And yeah, pretty excited about it.
All right. Well, go check that out. Go read Bob's piece in Politico when it comes out next week. Go check out ChaseMostPodcast.com. And if you like today's episode, don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review and tell us why you also prefer it being dark outside longer than it being
shut
light.
Up, Chase.
no, really, don't tell people. Don't, like, say that on, you know, dates. or anything or any public forums. Keep that on the inside.
All right. Well, I tried. Bob, Andrew, always a pleasure. I will talk to you guys next week.
Absolutely.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.